And the court will proceed to the next case, United States versus Toro. Mr. Schiller?
Good morning, May it please the court, my name is Brendan Schiller. I represent the defendant appellant, Raymond Toro. There's three arguments that were briefed, and I'm going to touch on all three arguments. I'm going to dwell on the second one, the 404B one, but I want to make it clear that even though there's three arguments, there's really only one issue, which is whether the defendant, the appellant, was a small-time street dealer addict who sold some PCP so that he could afford to use PCP, or was a big-time kingpin drug dealer who managed to put 5,000 vials of PCP on the street in a 5.5 month period during 2001.
Why do we have to assume that it was vial by vial as opposed to now and then selling an ounce here and an ounce there for somebody else to distribute, which there seems to be some evidence in the record of?
I don't think you have to assume that given all the evidence is that
well,
every
but
time
it makes a big difference to your calculation.
Well, no.
An ounce is already, you know, 24 of PCP, more than 24 grams. And you can get up to that more than a kilogram a lot faster by the ounce than you can by the 0.2 gram.
Sure, that's a vital point. My point was I don't think you need to assume it because all the evidence points to the fact that every time he was caught, including both the two 404B incidences as well as the two other indictments, indictment 4 and 5, he was dealing 0.2 vials.
But there, well, he was dealing vials that could have 0.2 in them. The vials can hold varying quantities, and there was testimonial evidence that sometimes there was more.
Well, actually, in terms of the fact that there was many different containers, you had these vials half full with 0.2 grams, so at the most they're always full with 0.4 grams. You had 1 ounce vanilla extract
right.
Bottles. He was never found with those in none of the instances, whether you're talking about the two 404B instances, whether you're talking about the incident he was indicted for in count 4, the incident he was indicted for in count 5.
But he doesn't
five.
Have to be caught red-handed with a vanilla bottle if there's other testimony in the record that suggests that sometimes he had them.
There was no, I would submit that there was no testimony in the record that submitted he ever had them. I would submit that the only testimony in the record, other than the 0.2 gram vials, was the very discredited Christine Williams testimony, and all she ever said was she gave him Mystic bottles. So
pints, yeah.
The pints. There was no testimony that he ever had the vanilla extract bottles, I believe.
But it's so hard to, I mean, even if you don't like Christine Williams' testimony, even if the district court judge criticized it to a certain degree, it doesn't mean it has to be disregarded altogether. The jury found beyond a reasonable doubt that there was more than a kilogram of a mixture containing PCP.
And it would be reasonable to assume that the jury found her credible if you didn't have so much confusing evidence going in. If you didn't have seven witnesses and really only one that were testifying to this one count and this quantity issue. If you didn't have a officer talking about an incident with 10 vials in 1996 that wasn't being prosecuted. If you didn't have an officer talking about 10 vials in the year 2000 that wasn't being prosecuted.
Why is that so confusing for the jury, though? Why can't they sort through it just the way you have?
Well, the lower court didn't sort through it. The lower court wasn't even sure that was 404B evidence being presented.
Well, she says all sorts of things about 404B, but in the end, when she says, okay, now I'm going to apply the law, she lets it in.
Well, in the end, if you're talking about on page 200 when she says, now I'm going to apply the law, She said she's going to let it in, quote, because if he was in the business of distributing, then it tends to show that he would be buying distribution quantity. And that's on page 200. Well, that's not permissible use for 404B. The question is it being let in to show intent, not quantity? And if it was being let in to show in quantity, then that's an impermissible use. Further, much later on, she says a variety of things. She says that she thinks it's unfair that this evidence is more prejudicial and probative, yet she still allows it in. She does not follow.
I don't think quite go so far as to say it's more prejudicial than probative. I think had she said that, you might have gotten a different ruling out of her. But
well,
she, in fact, says that it does show that there's no accident about this. It's a specific intent crime. The government's entitled to show you know perfectly well what you're doing because you've done it before. Intent, that's 404B.
Well, intent was never at issue.
Well, it doesn't matter, as you know. I mean, in our cases, we've said, just because you don't stand up and contest intent doesn't mean that the prosecution is not entitled to prove it.
Now, both in the motion in limine argument and the opening statement, as well as during the case, intent was never at issue. It was made clear that everything was conceded. All of the elements of the first count, all the elements of every other count was conceded except for the one question of quantity. That's all that was being discussed. And it does matter. It does matter per U.S. v. Best. It does matter per U.S. v. Beasley. It does matter per U.S. v. Najib. As a matter of fact, I think the Best case is right on point with this, where this court ruled that an abuse of discretion, that the lower court abused its discretion when he essentially let in 404B evidence to show that the defendant was a dealer, a distributor. The issue is not whether he was a dealer or a distributor. The issue is whether he had the intent, and that was conceded.
Beck made that same argument, said evidence is inadmissible to show intent because he's not disputing it, and we said, unfortunately for Beck, we've rejected this same argument on several occasions with a bunch of sites.
In Best?
United States versus Best, 2001 decision of this court.
I'm sorry, I said United States versus Best.
Oh, Best. Okay, that's a different case. But anyway, in the United States versus Best case in 2001, we considered exactly the argument that you're making and rejected it.
But I think the factual situation is exactly on point with the Best case. I'm already into my rebuttal. If I can make one point and then reserve the rest of the time. We talked about the first two arguments quickly on the third argument. We believe that there was a prima facie case presented and that a hearing was deserved and that the lower court confused the legal concept of legal conclusory with a factual conclusion, which is simply an assertion, and all that was enough to get a prima facie case.
Thank you, Mr. Shore.
Thank you.
Ms. Brown?
May it please the court. This case boils down to whether or not the evidence was in fact sufficient to convict the defendant of conspiracy to possess with the intent to distribute and to distribute over 1 kilogram of PCP. At the heart of the conspiracy charge was in fact the defendant's intent. Intent is at issue in this particular crime. It is a specific intent crime. Moreover, as the record reflects, his intent was at the heart of the defendant's own defense. Was the defendant's argument that he was merely a user and not a distributor of PCP. And intent is one of the reasons under 404B that you can admit evidence of prior bad acts. And those prior bad acts were admitted by the district court clearly, and on repeated occasions the district court stated, as evidence of the defendant's intent in this particular case to distribute rather than to just use. With respect to the defendant's argument that this was not probative, first of all, and second of all, was more prejudicial than probative, the record reveals that that is absolutely not the case. It's highly probative for exactly those reasons that I just discussed. With respect to the prejudice that this evidence may or may not have had on the jury, it's clear from the district court's careful, detailed discussion of Rule 404B that the district court was deeply aware and deeply concerned about the effect that 404B evidence may have on a jury generally in a criminal case. And after all of that consideration, the court made a comment that it is very clear, quote, it is very clear that in a case like this, the evidence that the government asked the court to admit and that the court did in fact admit was in fact probative to the defendant's intent in this case. Now, even if this court were to accept defendant's argument that the evidence was in fact prejudicial. That prejudicial effect was cured by the jury instruction. The jury instruction that was agreed upon between the defendant and the government, that that particular evidence should only be used to find whether or not the defendant had a particular intent in this case. Furthermore, the evidence of the defendant's guilt was overwhelming, so if there was prejudice beyond that, that prejudice and that error was harmless. And that moves me to the first issue the defendant raised, which is the sufficiency of the evidence. There was an account of Christine Williams, an account that clearly the jury found credible. Christine Williams testified that over a six-month period on a weekly basis, she supplied the defendant with a pint of PCP per week. Christine Williams' account was corroborated by a number of different pieces of evidence. First of all, there were pen register calls that documented calls between Christine Williams and the defendant. Second of all,
I was going to ask you this question. Obviously, you presented to the jury kind of the zones of how much PCP is involved, which tell us which sentencing range we're in, and the jury opts for more than a kilogram of the mixture. So that establishes certain statutory points. Do you think it's possible for a district court in the sentencing hearing to conclude that any amount less than a kilogram was involved, or is that finding of the jury beyond a reasonable doubt now a floor for the district court? Obviously, we know by a preponderance the district court could decide that there were 10 kilograms, not one, but can it go the other way?
The government would submit that it can't, that the jury has been given this verdict form, that they've been asked under Apprendi, and they've been given the jury form pursuant to Apprendi, and they've been asked to find beyond a reasonable doubt what the quantity was at issue. And in this case, they found beyond a reasonable doubt that the quantity was over 1 kilogram.
Of the mixture, which triggers the 20-year minimum sentence.
Certainly. And in the end, the evidence altogether, Christine Williams' testimony says a pint a week, which is 398 grams. You get 3 weeks, and there you have it.
The district court was very skeptical about her credibility. But
yes, the district court was concerned about Ms. Williams' credibility. But as this court has recognized and as Your Honor pointed out, it is the purview of the trier of fact to determine credibility, and only in cases where it was physically impossible for Ms. Williams to observe what she testified to, which is not the case here, or in cases where it was physically impossible for the defendant to do what the government alleged that he did, which is not the case here. And in fact, in the defendant's brief on page 28, detailed exactly how it is that he could go about distributing over a kilogram of PCP is not the case.
Now, was there evidence that he did this all personally, or that he, I thought I remembered some indication that maybe others were helping him with this distribution?
Well, there was Mr. Napoleon Moore, who was the head of the organization, Ms. Christine Williams, and then what Ms. Christine Williams testified to is that it was her understanding that he would go to a particular location and sell these drugs on his own, actually. And so what the evidence was is that he had time. I mean, this is a person who did not have employment other than selling PCP, so it's entirely physically possible for him to distribute that quantity of PCP. Beyond the issues of the sufficiency of the evidence and beyond the issue of the 404B evidence, with respect to the final issue of the suppression hearing, there was no prima facie showing that would warrant a suppression hearing. The statements that the defendant made in his affidavit is that he was, quote, intoxicated, quote, unquote, tricked and confused, and that he was not fully aware of the circumstances. Without more, those are conclusory allegations. The trial court determined that they were conclusory allegations and denied the defendant's motion for a suppression hearing. And that is not clear error under this court's extensive case law. If there aren't any further questions by this court, I'll conclude.
Apparently not. Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Thank you. The government respectfully requests that the court uphold the defendant's sentence and conviction.
Mr. Schiller?
A few quick points. One, the question on the insufficiency of the evidence is not just, is it theoretically impossible for this ever to have been done? Was it theoretically impossible given the circumstances? It was undisputed it was 0.2 grams. It's undisputed it would take 5,000 of these, you'd have to sell 5,000 of these to get to a kilogram. It's undisputed he was in prison until the beginning of June and went back in prison in the middle of December. It's undisputed he was an addict who spent lots amount of time high and a lot of time asleep. It's undisputed there was three different people testifying to how these deals work, and it's a 15 to 20 minute elaborate process to sell one of these on the street. So in essence, you're talking about a high, malnourished guy who spent a lot of time sleeping, spending 12 hours a day, every single day from the time he got out of jail in June to the time he went into jail in December, constantly selling these vials to a revolving door of customers. Yes, it's not theoretically impossible, but in this case, given these facts, it was impossible. In terms of Ms. Williams' credibility, on the lower standard of preponderance of the evidence, the lower court judge said she's not credible. Now, we don't know what the jury found. We know they had a higher standard. We don't know what they found. We know that they were presented with multiple types of evidence about selling drugs here, selling drugs there, selling drugs now, selling drugs then. And so it was logical that they added all that up and concluded, okay, he must have sold a kilogram. We don't know that they believe Christine Williams. On a lower standard, the lower court did not believe Christine Williams. In terms of the 404B, I would really ask that you all take the time to read three cases, Beasley, Najib, and Betts. Najib, 56 Fed 3rd 798, Beasley, 809 Fed 3rd 1273, Betts, 16 Fed 3rd 748. It's three different points that are vital, I believe. One, the 403 determination has to be considered when it comes to a 404B question, that third factor has to be considered. Principled discretion with some findings of fact on the record. I would submit that the only findings of fact on the record, whether you're looking at her saying it's basically unfair in 615, whether you're looking at saying this is part of the problem we face on 617, whether you're looking at saying where do we draw the line, can the mind of a man grasp such a concept on 619, I would submit that her findings of fact went the opposite of the actual legal conclusion. Whether you're talking about, that's the Najib case, and without that, there should be a remand. And again, in
would I ask the judge to make those same kind of statements and then reach the same conclusion?
Excuse me?
Where are we going to go with the remand? You can view it two ways. She's either extremely stressed and going over all the matters and not being summary, but then surprisingly, I guess, in your view, reaching another conclusion, Mr. Schiller. I mean, what more would the judge do? We have a judge who seems to take some time on the issue.
I think it's a very important question, and for this reason, it allows me to ask to the question of harmless error and prejudice. As I started this, what we're talking about is basically whether this is a guy who deserves to serve a handful of years or this is a guy who deserves to serve 20 years. And I think with some proper, and so we're not talking about overturning conviction here, with some proper instructions from this court on remand, we may have a more considered review and analysis, not only the 404B question, the 403 question, but you could take some leeway and just have a more considered review and analysis of the sentence itself, consequently.
How would that occur?
I'm not sure. I'm making it up as I answer your question.
No, I appreciate that. I understand the dilemma of that. I just was wondering how that could be revisited in this situation.
I'm not sure. Like I said, I made it up as I answer your question. But that's really where we're trying to get. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Schiller. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.